name is Martin Wells. I'm one of the directors here at the Village, and I'll moderate the forum tonight. These forums are one of the best parts of Holden Village. Those of you who have been here before know that many, many thousands of subjects and topics have been hashed over around this great grand fireplace. Used to be a giant black hood that would block your view so you couldn't see who you were arguing with, and the flames would lick high, and the tape ministry people would be upset because the crackling fire would disrupt the sound and the tape wouldn't be any good. We still gather in a circle here to share ourselves and our conversation about important topics of our day and our church. So, welcome to a Holden Forum. The ground rules are simple, and for most of you, they would be utterly common sense, and that is that we'll treat each other with respect tonight. I hope that we have a good conversation, and sometimes that includes vigorous debate. But the point is always to talk about the ideas that we share and not to point our barbs at one another in a personal way. I guess my job is to be the liturgical policeman here or something. Dismiss the company when we get out of hand or something. The topic tonight is, are denominations obsolete? This topic came together at the meeting of the teaching faculty the other night, and four persons were solicited to help begin the conversation tonight. We'll ask them each to introduce themselves and to say a little bit about their denominational background, if any, and then to offer an opinion which may stimulate the conversation and get us started. We'll try not to let the panelists dominate the evening, limiting their total time to about 20 minutes or so, so that we can be sure that there's time for everyone to offer their opinions. On my right is Bob Stivers, a professor at Pacific Lutheran University, Presbyterian. Bill Malcolmson, on my left, American Baptist, and part of our teaching faculty this week. Christy Post comes out of the Lutheran tradition, and I have the pleasure of, doesn't come out of the Lutheran tradition. If she gets in trouble, I'll help her out. She's coming out of some tradition.
Episcopalian.
Okay, I didn't get your actual assignments. And Ann Stemple, and do you represent a certain cause or Roman Catholic? Thank you very much. I knew that and I forgot to write it down. Well, Bob, would you be willing to begin and introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Presbyterian and proud of it. I have been teaching 20 years at Lutheran schools, and I know all about Lutherans. To be glib to start with, let me say that I have, first of all, three theses, and then I'll try to elaborate a little bit. One is that, yes, denominations are obsolete. Two, they don't know it. And three, there's nothing we can or should do about it. With regard to the first two of these theses, I want to cite maybe six or seven factors very briefly as to what makes them hang together or obsolete. First of all, I think there are a set of economic factors. First of all, something that holds them together or holds groups together or denominations is the fact that often our expression reflects social class, and social class still is a major factor in American life, even though we like to speak of our equality of life in the United States. Second economic factor holding them together is their pension plans. I think a more major factor than some people believe. On the other hand, economic factors making them obsolete, one is the increasing, well, not, I don't know about increasing, but continued affluence, and particularly the mobility that goes along with it, which makes for independence and shopping around people, and far less denominational allegiance than they used to have. The second factor making them obsolete is the increasing shortages of funds, which makes it increasingly difficult to maintain bureaucracies, expensive bureaucracies. A second factor is historical. One thing that has held the basis of many denominations in the United States are old world European state churches, or churches that came out of various theological disputes in the old world. And there, for some people, these things still are important. We joke about the Norwegians around Holden and around PLU, but some people take that very seriously, and this still counts for them. On the other hand, as more and more generations get further and further away from the European heritage, these things tend to break down and become much weaker. And certainly in America, the socialization of America is far stronger than any kind of historical denominational pull. So that's leading us apart. A third is demographics. I don't think there's anything in the demographics thing that holds us together. But one thing that is causing a decline in the main, so-called mainline denominations is the men and women of these churches aren't having many kids. They have very low birth rate in comparison to some of the other denominations, and that's one of the reasons why there is a population decline. Again, the high mobility associated with, insofar as that is a demographic factor. Politics, again, little that holds us together, but a lot that tears us apart and makes denominations obsolete. The political left and right is alive and well in the church, unless you haven't noticed. These political divisions are very strong in churches and tending to cause great divisions in them. The fifth area I would talk about is differences of theology. Again, differences of theological persuasion lead to different groups. But it also, on the other hand, in terms of making denominations obsolete, is those divisions exist within denominations as well as it makes for different groups. At the same time, it makes the groups themselves very divisive. And those theological differences have torn denominations apart for years and years and caused splits. The sixth element is what I would call vested interest. Holding them together, I think perhaps the strongest is the fact that the people that are most interested in the denominations, usually the clergy and the staff at national offices and regional offices, have a lot at stake in maintaining the denominations, and they're very, very interested. And these people tend to be the leaders of the church, so it follows naturally that when the leadership is for the denominations, denominations tend to hold together. Again, I don't think these people realize that maybe the denominations are obsolete. On the other hand, tearing them apart is that most of the laity don't have these vested interests and really don't give a hoot very much about people who do have vested interests. I think this is particularly true of the young people, though I'm not young and can't speak for them. There seems to be a vast boredom with the whole issue of denominationalism among, I never hear it brought up by any of my students, for example. And finally, I think the thing that's most making denominations obsolete is the fact that American culture is a far greater socialization factor than church communities. Church communities used to be very important when we lived in small towns and were ethnically involved. Today, with a mass culture and a mass media, there are so many other, and an educational system that homogenizes people in another way than religious. Leads to a terrible blurring of denominational lines. I could go on. The ecumenical movement was an attempt to overcome the obsolescence, but it was a top-down movement that drew very little, in the last few years has had very little influence and enthusiasm. Well, we could go into exactly why, and there's a few other things that could be said, but that's probably enough.
Thank you. Bill?
I'm Bill Malcolmson. I'm retired now, but for most of my professional life was a seminary teacher at American Baptist Seminary of the West in Berkeley, California. And I've also been a pastor and a denominational bureaucrat with vested interest, at least for that period of time, in the non-obsolescence of a denomination. Of course, the job I had got killed not long after I had it. It's interesting to hear Bob because I think that I take not a different tag exactly, but just sort of from a different, over here instead of there. First thing I want to say is I think one of the reasons that denominations could become obsolete is because Christians are drawn together in different ways than by denominations. I suggest three. One, I think a lot of Christians today are drawn together by theological subcultures. One of the subcultures would be, for example, evangelical subculture. This was indicated by a friend of mine, an American Baptist minister, who in a panel group one time said, I'm first of all a Christian, secondly an evangelical, and thirdly an American Baptist. What he really meant was, I'm first of all an evangelical, secondarily a Christian, and about 18th an American Baptist. But nonetheless, there is an evangelical subculture, and I think a lot of ministers and laity I know, really their allegiance is there, their interest is there. They buy the books in all those bookstores and listen to the same radio and TV programs, and there is a kind of a subculture. There is a subculture, not just a kind of a subculture. There's also, then, a New Age subculture, in which persons who have, one reason or other, well, they often come out of a lot of different backgrounds, sometimes religious, sometimes not so, and are drawn together by a lot of interesting things that are happening in things like creation spirituality and a lot of different learning centers around the country. This is a, I think, a very, though it's not a unified subculture, you kind of know who the others are. And then there's a, again, a subculture which I call the more liberation-oriented or liberation theology-oriented subculture, which includes a number of us who would tend to identify ourselves more with that than we would with redenominations and would seek persons across the spectrum to interact with. Another way in which people are drawn together is by certain social causes. Again, across denominational lines, but it isn't just across denominational lines, because I think a lot of people who are drawn together by social causes do not think of it as, I'm a Baptist who's involved in ecology, but just think of, I'm a person who's involved with it. Ecology, I think, is a very strong movement now. Women's movement, men's movement, you can think of a whole lot of causes. I know the Church Council of Greater Seattle, for example, would basically, the Church Council, which is a very vital and alive Church Council, which is a little unique, draws people together almost exclusively through working on issues together which are important to them. And the points are not particularly made that this person's Lutheran and this person's Catholic and so forth. Thirdly, and I think this has become very powerful, I know we strictly see it among American Baptists, but I think it's true among a lot of others, is that the real allegiance of people is not to a denomination but to a specific congregation or parish. We have people, for example, come to our church, which is Seattle First Baptist, which has around 900 members. And they say, well, I'd like to become a member of this church. Do I have to become a Baptist? There are even a few who ask, do I have to become a Christian? Because what they're drawn to is this particular situation, this particular congregation. And that's happening all over. People will come to congregations because they like the pastor, or because the issues they're dealing with are important, or because the atmosphere is really exciting to them. Couldn't care less what denomination it was. A second area, I think, where we're finding that another reason for why denominations may become obsolescent is the training of clergy. A lot of people today are trained in interdenominational or non-denominational seminaries. Fuller Seminary, for example, in Pasadena, California, has reached the ascendancy in terms of training ministers. Non-denominationally, Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia, to think of places that are in the northwest, and even to an extent in a place which I love very much, the Graduate Theological Union, which in Berkeley, which has schools of a lot of denominations, but the training in many ways is not denominational training, and so there are many times when a person really is not given a lot of opportunity to be socialized into their own denomination. I know that Fuller graduates, for example, which has really hit our denomination, Fuller graduates are basically conservative evangelical subculture folks, will look for churches that interest them more than they will look for churches in a particular denomination. And if you look at the ads now in a number of the magazines, they will say things like, this is a vital and alive church who wants such and such a person. And then down at the bottom, it will say, this is United Church of Christ, or this is, you know, whatever. I was going to say something about diminishing finances, but I think Bob said that beautifully, and then you'd be said again.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Chrissy?
I'm Chrissy Post, and I'm a member of this community now for the winter as half-time teacher's assistant and half-time kitchen worker, and graduated from PLU, and there's too many PLU people sitting in front of you, but maybe not. My experience when I said to Martin, I'm not Lutheran, that's sort of a misnomer in a way. I grew up Episcopalian, and if I was to choose what I would, the denomination I would be a part of, I would say I'm Episcopalian. But I've spent time with the Quaker Church in high school, and I've spent lots of time with the Lutheran Church over college and now here. And also some time with the Catholic Church when I worked with the community for mentally disabled adults. So I think my experience in some ways has been very ecumenical. But I think I would hold a different position than these two people. I think denominations are still important and probably still alive in some ways because of the heritage they provide and the different sorts of worship. I don't know if that's necessarily good, but I think that they do provide a different variation on the same story, hopefully, and it's ideal, different ways to worship. And a lot of these differences are because of different cultures or different economic standings. There's a lot of different factors, but I think they are still alive in that way. They have a history behind them, and I think people, especially young people, would probably want to forget, but and may be forgetting, but I still think it's there, and to say that it's completely gone, I don't think so quite yet. I see it in the middle of a balancing point right now with the need to reclaim a history and a tradition that is very deep in many denominations, but also a real need to be inclusive in the nature of these communities, denominational communities. So I guess that's all I have to say for now.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, my name is Ann Stemple, and I'm definitely out of my element here. I am a Roman Catholic, and I have been all my life, and I've always been happy to be Catholic. I feel that the younger people now are not part of the Roman Catholic Church because of the structure of the church. I don't think the priests are as outgoing as they might be, as reaching out to the parishioners like they should. And I think the hierarchy of the church is a problem for the young people. But other than that, I kind of agree with all of you about the denomination. One thing I didn't think, that people would just join a church no matter what it was, because they had heard that, well, the pastor was good, or the music was good, or something like that. Actually, I think they joined the Catholic Church because they want to be Catholic, or the Episcopal Church because they want to be Episcopalian. And
well, that is a good survey of various opinions. I would like to throw it open to your comments now. You can respond to an individual speaker, or just speak to the group as a whole. And we'll try and call on you to keep some order to the thing. But other than that, what are your comments? Are denominations obsolete?
It seems to me that nowadays some of the very fastest growing churches, if you will, are those that are, well, I call it charismatic, but only in the sense that they have a maybe a very active, outgoing, charismatic minister and lots of things going on, and they draw people without any particular pretense, it seems to me, as to what denomination they might be, if they are in fact a denomination. So there is an awful lot of church joining that seems to be purely non-denominational, but more of an attraction for what's going on within that particular facility.
Yes.
In none of the comments that I already referenced to the impact of government, it seems to me that whether you call it political correctness or diversity or this general concern for other views, over time and increasingly, the federal government in particular has had a role in bringing about a ever greater and deeper and more dramatic, if not hostile, element of separation between church and state, far more so than was the case when I grew up. And we got Bible readings and even the Pledge of Allegiance, and God mm-hmm. was not something to be ashamed of in the morning recognition. It would appear as though the pursuit of the secular, what do you call it, humanism or whatever you call it, is the cause that is rock solid in the government camp, something that would be inspired and enhanced and furthered more so than a Christian or any religious orientation. And again, I see this as a perhaps more subtle, not as obvious as declining finances or other causes or TV or those factors, but nevertheless, a very major and long-term element of the decline of the churches. And I just have to hear some comments from your panel on that topic.
I think there's a difference between the decline of the church and the obsolescence of it. And I don't even know what it means to say the church is in decline. Certainly, if it's a matter of numbers that you're referring to, perhaps, the secular humanism versus the religious orientation of culture, that's been going on for 150 years, and it's been a pretty steady sort of thing as we become, as other avenues of influence become stronger and stronger and stronger. It's not surprising that churches should atrophy to some degree. And I don't think that's any, it'll reverse itself at some point, because I think there will always be a religion of people that are interested in religion. But I don't think, and I don't know what to do about decline, but obsolete, our denominational structure I think may be obsolete. And I wonder if we really want to redesign it. One side of me says we ought to break apart the denominations and let people of like mind gather together. On the other hand, I'm not sure I want to be in a church with everybody with a like mind. This is an off-the-cuff sort of response.
I think in part what happens, though, is I think people have a sense of wanting to belong. And belonging is an emotional thing. It isn't a rational. And the mainline churches, for lack of a better word, is based on rituals, on tradition, on history, and it doesn't allow a great deal for meeting that human need of being a part of belonging, a sense of becoming involved. And I think that's where the charismatic movement comes in, and where they are, where you are emotionally involved in your religion.
I think that's true in some ways, but I guess the history and the tradition, it eventually has proved needs to be also an emotional tie to the liturgical church, speaking myself, but I spent some time in college with InterVarsity. It was an interdenominational type group, and it was PLU pretty associated with the Baptist Church in the area, and was at times quite conservative. And I found that that did provide a sense of community at the time, but it was very short-lived because it had nothing behind it. Once it was gone, it was gone. And I guess that's, in some way, why I would say that denominations won't become obsolete very quickly, because they do have a history and of emotional ties for a lot of people. And I don't think that'll go away immediately.
We find people, for example, our church who have come out of often New Age movements, and they want to be involved in the history. They want to be involved in a context where they feel like it's gone on for a while rather than just the last 3 weeks. And that's been, but I still wonder, though, how much of that is a desire to really be involved in the denomination, and how much of it is an affirmation of a particular parish. And that's sort of hard to sift out.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to respond just to one thing Christy said real quickly. I don't think denominations are obsolete, but the current structure of denominations may be obsolete.
That makes more sense to me.
That's what I'd like to try to say.
Like, specifically.
Well, that some people are Lutheran or Presbyterian. I have more in common with people in some people in the Lutheran church than I am in the Presbyterian church. And I wouldn't mind seeing a new fallout of different. I mean, we're going to have denominations because we have structure. You need structure to anything. Free-floating form dies quickly, but you need structure, and there's going to be structure, and given the diversity that we have, there's going to be different structures, hence denomination.
I was telling Bob this afternoon that one of the things I read in the last year is that 50 of the largest mega churches across the country, and these mega church models, non-denominational community mega churches gathering around usually a pastor's personality or a particular style of ministry that's very public and has a charism to it. Many would suppose that the growth of those mega churches is leading to the decline of loyalty to denominations. Yet these 50 largest mega churches were forming a union for the purposes of doing overseas mission together. I thought, well, that's just a new denomination being born.
Right.
Only it's on a, it's just on a different scale, you know.
We're probably in for a lot of that. Joining together, new groups forming, part of the American experience.
How many of you in the room that are Lutheran know that there's something going on in our church, in ELCA now, regarding a pulpit and altar fellowship with another church? There is dialogue that's likely to be voted on in 77 between the Reformed Church, Presbyterian side, on the one hand, and there's also an outreach to the more liturgical side of the church, the Episcopalians. But that's not generating a heck of a lot of enthusiasm in the church, is it? I mean, that's not.
Well, it's maybe the dialogue as much between the two. It's the hierarchy and the fact that, you know, bishops and all this kind of stuff that our particular congregation has some real problems with. It isn't the fact that we would be having fellowship together. It's the hierarchy that we didn't like. The bureaucracy that comes along with it. That seems to, anyway.
It seems to me that there's a certain amount of loyalty, if you will, to one's own tradition, particularly depending on how much education you have received about the tradition and background that there is in your church. And there's a loyalty there that you don't want to give up. But at the same time, I think that what Jen spoke of as the need to belong is there. And that draws us together, ideally, that draws us together in an ecumenical body so that we truly realize that just as we are, if you will, different families living in the same community, we are different parishes belonging to the same church.
I sometimes wondered whether denominations are a gift of the Holy Spirit or a scandal against the Holy Spirit.
Both.
Yes. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
I mean, there's the notion of the different churches being rather like the body of Christ imagery, that we simply are not the same. And yet it's the oneness of it all together that makes up the body. And yet when we war with one another, it truly feels like a church.
And isn't it interesting that in times of war, for instance, when different bodies have gotten together, how unimportant it is what denomination people are. So there is somewhere, there is something where we're real close, all of us. And yet, I have lived with Baptists because there was no other choice for several years. And I have wonderful friends among them. But when it comes to theology, there are times when we are real close, when, you know, when we agree, when everything's fine, and all of a sudden there's a part where I would just have to walk away and say, you know, you are my sisters, my brothers, but there is something that I cannot cross. What would we do with that? There is a difference.
I suppose one of my biggest concern about the denomination of that, and I'm Lutheran, is sort of the war between institutional survival, survival of the denomination, and theology, and denominationalism is very much at war with theology. Not too long ago, when I was, in the early spring, I was in the Bay Area following the hearing regarding the defrocking of the Lutheran pastor. And one of the comments made by the person who conducted the hearing on behalf of the ELCA was, if we allow a gay pastor to continue to be ordained and serve the church, people would leave the church in droves. So it had nothing to do with theology. The comment had nothing to do with the correct theology regarding a gay Lutheran pastor. It had to do with numbers and survival. And in that sense, I don't care if the Lutheran church survives under those conditions.
Yeah, it seems that for me that the hierarchy could very easily be gotten rid of and changed, and what would be core could still be there. And to me, that's the theology, the history, and the liturgy, the particular way of expressing the story. And that would be what I would want to save, but it seems ridiculous to be worried about numbers to me, because that has very little to do with talk about God, which is supposedly what we're doing.
The hierarchy or the structure?
Or the problem?
Because I think you can have a non-hierarchical structure. I don't see how you go that.
Yeah.
You keep things together without some sort of structure.
Oh, well, I'm not saying no structure.
Okay.
Otherwise, there'd be chaos.
Well, it seems to me that any time a man wants to preach, he can gather a few together and name a church anything. And there's no denomination to it. And I would think that was what was breaking down the denominations. Because a few Baptists go and a few Presbyterians go, and you don't even know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to find out what one church believes, except they believe the Bible was written by the hand of God, and that's it.
So is that a positive or a negative for you that that's happening? I think you're right that it is happening.
It's kind of troubling. Because they just, like that, there's no inquisitiveness. There's no wondering. It's just encapsulated and it's just fed to them and they just take it.
There's no self-criticism in it.
Well, no, I just wonder what they are.
American experience.
I was raised with Methodist, Baptist, Presbyterians. Now, what is this church? What is it? And it's got a huge congregation.
The American experience has been with these wild blooms all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things we need to think about. Is just that the American experience is cyclical. Yeah, and we do go through changes and we go through ups and downs. And yet the traditional, the ones that are based in tradition and history, those churches have survived all of these up and downs. And I wonder if we're not into one of those cycles again, where we have a lot of emotional involvement now in our religion, and yet the ones that seem to survive are the ones who do have the history, that do have the tradition. Because a lot of it, as some of the panel members were saying, a lot of them depend on the person who runs that church, that group, that organization. You know, we have one of the best ones going in Portland.
New Hope
is an enormous church and organization, and they do very well and they draw a lot of people. But a lot of that has also to do with the personality behind it. And I wonder what will happen when that personality is not there.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me that there's some value. Sometimes we speak of the hierarchy and the bureaucracy of a church, of a denomination, as being negative. But there's something about continuity that is really critical, so that churches just simply don't get run by the strong leaders within a local congregation. There's something healthy, it seems to me, about when change starts to, there's a dialogue, a forum for dialogue, and you come up and you rub each other the wrong way a lot of times. But there's something about that dialogue that can happen not just within a single congregation, but that can happen denomination-wide. That's a healthy thing. And so that you just don't have local congregations developing their theology over the emotions of whoever happens to be in the church at the time and going off this way and going off this way. When there's a denominational structure, they come up and they butt heads with each other, and probably both grow as a result. Plus the experience of what's happening not only in this church, but what's happening in the same denominational church across the country. And it seems to me that that's a healthy thing for denominations, and speaks of a need to keep denominations active.
I do think it's healthy to keep challenging denominations too. Golden, I think, is kind of in its ideal a place where that can happen with the history, but a place where lots of really tough questions can be raised, and the question of, well, does it really matter? Is this Lutheran heritage something we want to hang on to, or are there parts we need to get rid of? Can we live with both? And I think it's a good place to do it. Ask some of the really tough theological questions and emotional questions in a framework of community, and in a framework of a community even beyond Golden. So that there's something to go back. There's some heritage to look to. It's scary to me to be completely on my own. doing that kind of questioning. I'd rather do it in a place where there's something to look to. But I think it needs to be done, especially as we talk about denominations becoming obsolete and the world changing as it is.
Some might argue that the whole world is beset by a time, maybe part of a cycle, where institutions of all kinds are breaking down and being challenged. Certainly democracy is going through a spasm now. I don't know what it's like in your state, but we're doing more and more direct governing by initiative than representative government as the framers thought. Certainly the business world is changing radically as formal loyalties, pension funds didn't make a hang's worth of difference in the business world. They just, companies bought out right and left, and the whole nature of the business world changing all kinds of ways, and people left drifting. I wonder if that has to do with some notion of a larger question of a breakdown of authority in the culture. I think denominations in part used to be about who was right, who had it right, and who had it wrong. And having lost our confidence that we can say, mine is the true path, we no longer see a need to harbor together with other like-minded folk to preserve our position. And yet when we give up accountability or authority or change the authority structure, then we also change the accountability structure. And so we have pastors of large churches built around the charism of an individual who are accountable to no one, in a sense. So I think there's an argument to be made in denominations that they, like you were saying, they insist on a sort of an accountability beyond the local parish.
I wonder though if there are really very many people in American culture under the age of 45 or so who really put much of a value on I'm a Lutheran or I'm a Baptist or I'm an Episcopalian or whatever. Now my generation does because we learned that, but do they really? I mean, is the American Baptist the only denomination that's dying by attrition? Is it that most of our churches, the average age in them would be around 60? I mean, that's not real. That's not just a wave, I don't think. And, I just don't feel that people, 40s and under, really sense Lutherans or whatever is way down there somewhere. I mean, they may say I'm charismatic, that may be real high, or they may say I'm New Age, or I'm Evangelist, conservative evangelical, or that sort of thing. That may be, really important, or I'm a member of Calvary Temple might be real important. But to say that I'm, is the identification really there denominationally? Aren't there more significant identification?
How many of you, if given a piece of paper right now, could write down 5 distinctive characteristics of your denominational tradition? How many would have confidence that they could do that? That's more than I would have guessed. The persistent question I've heard from people in parishes is, what is a Lutheran? What is it that makes a Lutheran a Lutheran?
So what do you say?
Well, I go through my list of 8 characteristics and I say these are shared, different aspects here are shared with other denominations, but the total picture of these 8 characteristics is what we would call Lutheran.
Is that a historical analysis, or is that a present-day reality you're dealing with?
That's an historical trajectory,
right,
of a movement. Lutheranism was never meant to be a denomination. It was always intended to be a movement for reform within the Church Catholic. It wasn't Martin Luther that started his own denomination. It was excommunication that started the process. So, I mean, there's that angle of it too. And some would say that's the reason why the Lutheran Church suffers today, is because it never had, at its birth, at its inception, never had the right framework or skeleton to put together a structure for survival, because it didn't intend to survive. It intended to reform within. And eventually, or perhaps eventually re-merge, or perhaps live in parallel fashion with the Roman Catholic Church as a constant reforming impulse from within the Catholic Church itself.
Well, I don't know what our kids get in confirmation, but I know I wait for Reformation Sunday to roll around just to see if the pastor will slip and mention Martin Luther's name. And mostly they don't slip. The sermon always comes down justification by faith, and it's always great, and it's always wonderful because of pericope helps that. But unless they're hearing about the Reformation and Buddha Martin at home, well, I'm sure they're not getting it from the Sunday school teachers. I mean, what they get from the Sunday school teachers is that there were exactly 12 colors in Joseph's coat. And this is a foundation of faith.
They probably work blueprints of that.
Probably right. And so how could the tradition that I learned growing up amidst everyone whose last name ended in S-O-N, except mine. How could they know the Lutheran tradition? How could they? And I'm not surprised, I'm sure they're not. And you know, I think too, I've talked to some Lutheran pastors about this from time to time over the years, and I think there's almost a certain embarrassment. Maybe that's not quite the word, but we are as preaching Christ to the nations. That was the motto of the Lutheran Hour, wasn't it? Preaching Christ to the nations. Okay, so we have churches on Indian reservations. And so if we talk to the Navajo about, well, Martin Luther said this and Jesus said that, we've confused them. Who's the God here? We are reaching out to Hispanics as well as, you know, of course we've had missionaries in other lands. But I mean, now we have people of diverse non-Nordic backgrounds here in our own backyards, and we're trying to bring them in and to bring up Martin Luther. Effort? What's that, you know? How is that relevant to the church's task today to not preach to the sons and daughters of Norway and Sweden, but to preach to all manner of men and women? And I think that is a difficult, I'm sure if I were a pastor, I'd have trouble with that. Because with my interest, I'd work Martin Luther into a lot of my sermons. And I rarely hear it. Rare. I'd rather count hen's teeth than enumerate the times that Brother Martin is brought up in a sermon from a Lutheran pulpit, in my experience.
Same thing for Roger Williams.
And we're doing
an abysmal job of teaching children.
I agree.
The aspects of faith, students come to our classes and they don't know who. I mean, every once in a while you find a pastor's child and a couple of evangelical types who know a little bit about the Bible, a little about the tradition, but vast ignorance of and not much interest in learning those specific elements.
Is that the Sunday school's problem? Or?
I think in part that, but I think it's the pervasive power of the outside media that, mm-hmm. and other sources of socialization. The church is just small drop in the bucket. I mean, we're facing some very powerful forces. And it's not surprising that we just don't have the resources to compete with much stronger, more powerful, more interesting, perhaps. I mean, they have violence and sex going for them. We don't have that.
Well, it would help if we had Barney.
What?
Yeah, but stop. It would help if Barney talked about Martin Luther.
But I have a question. You mentioned is the problem within the Sunday schools that the kids don't know the tradition of the church. Are we there to teach denominationalism? I haven't been a Sunday school teacher for a long time, but that certainly wouldn't be interesting to me. I wouldn't even want to teach kids denominationalism.
Would you teach them? Are you Lutheran?
No, I'm not Lutheran.
Would you teach them? Well, what are you?
I'm Methodist right now. I've been Presbyterian
Would you teach them Methodist heritage?
I think, no. I would not. I would leave that to somebody else.
Is the curriculum in your church Methodist curriculum?
Yeah, I believe it is.
There's nothing on Methodist heritage yet.
There may be, but we also have the option of teaching. we don't necessarily have to go by
that. I understand.
Yeah. And I just think it's more important to teach the children about Jesus and love and what the kids need, there you go, than it is to teach them about denominationalism. They can get that in confirmation class if they're Lutheran or in whatever.
A lot of them don't come understand the gospel either.
Yeah, and if we're not there to teach them that, what are we doing there?
But some are. Some are, by the way. Sunday schools are important.
I believe it, but not to teach denominationalism.
But can we have curricula that are free of interpretation and are the interpretations in and of themselves a representation of the doctrine from which they come, the denomination from which they come?
When I was in the Presbyterian Church and I was a teacher of ninth grade kids, that was the situation. But since I'm not in the Presbyterian Church any longer, and I have done some teaching in the Methodist Church, and I felt much more free in the Methodist Church to teach.
Beautiful. Because you don't have to be a Methodist.
I what?
Because you don't have to be a Methodist.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, if somebody asked me what I am, I'm not interested in telling them about my denomination. That isn't what's important to me.
It's interesting that my mom's teaching Sunday school now to, I think, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. And part of their daily thing is to go over the responses in the liturgy in an Episcopal church. And I would say that if for no other reason than my mom's an Episcopalian, there are different ways that she looks at the Bible in a certain way that perhaps another denomination would not, whether it's in the book or not, that comes across. And they do learn things, I think, still. And I don't know that that's bad, because I still think that, I mean, the focus is still on the gospel, but it also works with the particular church that they're in, the kids are in. At a very young age, which is surprising to me, but I know it's there.
3 years old, some of them.
Yeah. Well, the idea is to get them familiar with, you know, what you say. When do you say thanks to God? And when do you? And it probably helps to a certain extent them feel comfortable.
You know, I think that our materials are formed, our theology is formed from many sources. I mean, here I'm a United Methodist, but I don't only read United Methodist theologians or United Methodist writers. I find Henry Nouwen to be most stimulating. I find Buechner to be very stimulating in my way. And I think this is what happens. We draw from so-called experts, no matter what their denomination happens to be, if their theology speaks to our life and gives meaning to us, we resonate to it. And some of it then finds its way through our materials and our Sunday schools and our adult studies. And it's not listed as these are Methodists that we're talking about, but these are persons that have something to say to us about our faith and can help us form our faith in ways that are significant and meaningful. So I think this is another thing that most of our education, and I know about clergy too, most of the clergy, I think, are educated in a very broad way, not on the basis of a denomination, but on the basis of who it is that's speaking, whether or not what is spoken is of worth, is of value.
Could we say that you have become a denomination of one? That you have, like so many people in an individualistic culture, picked and chosen from the supermarket of spiritual sources and put together your own package, and that is more important to you than being surrounded by people of like mind?
Well, I tend to agree with what was said here, and I'm not sure who said it, about I find camaraderie with people across denominations, not necessarily Methodists. And there are some Methodists, I must admit, that I am not as close to as I would be with some Lutherans, some Presbyterians, and some American Baptists. So I don't really feel that I'm just pick and choosing. I think I'm trying to be open enough to select the things that are meaningful to me and will inform my faith as well as the faith of the community.
But that still doesn't do away with our need for structure and for the validity of historical experience.
Well, no, it doesn't, as far as I'm concerned. I still consider myself a Methodist and a strong Methodist. I believe in it. I believe in our structure. I see some of the flaws in it. But nevertheless, I think any structure will have some flaws in it. It's a question of whether or not you work through the structure and whether or not you test it, and if it is doing the kind of job, if it's helping us in our work of discipleship, reaching out to other people, then we affirm that. Where it isn't doing that, where we can challenge it.
Ken, if you moved to a new town and you didn't like the Methodist church there, would you shrug it off?
Probably.
Well, I think one of the things he also touched up on for me was the fact that also your religion, your faith, is a matter of growth. It doesn't just happen. And again, I think structure plays an important part here. When you start in Sunday school, you start with the simple lessons. You start with talking about the children sitting on the knee of Jesus and about love and about the dove and those kinds of things. But as you grow older, you begin to broaden your view. And when you broaden your view, it does not mean that you give up the structure that you grew up with. It only means that you begin to look at it in a different way. And, you know, I'm an Episcopalian, and I love, I'm really hung up on our liturgy. And I love the early liturgy and the use of the Elizabethan language. I love that part of it. But at the same time, that doesn't exclude me reading and looking at other things, but it still has to fit within my structure.
We're close to having gone an hour, and the tradition here is that we go an hour and then give people an opportunity to be off to bed.